Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
All right, party people, welcome back to Zero Dark Nerdy, the galaxy's favorite pop culture podcast, brought to you by betonline.ag for all your sports betting needs, the Believe Podcast Network, and most importantly, the greatest comic book franchise in North Carolina. Of course, I am talking about our good friends over at Sailfish Comics, with locations in Greensboro, Winston-Salem, and Concord for all your comic book, graphic novel, and action figure needs. Do not forget, we have free comic book day coming up Saturday, May 4th. That's right, May the 4th be with you. So be sure to check out all three locations, whichever one is closest to you, for Sailfish Comics for free comic book day coming up on May 4th. This is your boy Brian, a.k.a. El Nino, and today I am joined with
Ryan Saber, Captain Cleveland, Browns, Cavs, Guardians, throwback, script I, Indians hat on, CLE till I die. What's up, man?
Not much, man. Glad to have you back, my brother. I know it's been a little bit. We are going to be covering two of our favorite shows of all time, because they're celebrating anniversaries. You know, normally Ryan and I, we do an anniversary episode, which is going to come. We'll do a full one here eventually throughout the year. But most importantly, these are two shows that mean the world to us. Rewatchable, I mean, times a million. And honestly, in terms of pop culture, mean the world in as far as our opinion to this day. Still incredibly relevant, still incredibly rewatchable. Entourage, celebrating its 20th anniversary this year, came out July 18, 2004. Sopranos, celebrating its 25th anniversary, coming out January 10th, 1999. How crazy is that to you, Ryan, that we're celebrating these milestones?
You're old, man. That's all that means. You're old. I mean, I got white in my beard, for Christ's sake. I think that's the gist of it. No, man, I mean, dude, this is... Two foundational shows, right? I mean, two monumental shows to HBO, the HBO empire. Obviously, HBO's got a lot more, but these are kind of, you know, two of the maybe handful of shows that really springboarded HBO to the, you know, the media platform that it is today, especially with, you know, episodic television. So, you know, without The Sopranos, without Entourage, you maybe don't get Game of Thrones. You maybe don't get White Lotus, you know, some of these other shows that are on HBO now. So, yeah, I mean, I think that if anything, just they were before all the great TV that we have now. And you know what? Let me say this too. They really changed the way people thought about television.
100%.
You know, before that, people, it was sitcoms and, you know, cop dramas and hospital dramas, and, you know, to have a family show like The Sopranos, family show, but also, you know, an organized crime show. And then with Entourage, to have just kind of like a buddy comedy, you know, shot in the way that it was shot. I mean, they were just shows that were ahead of their time. So, yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, there's my thoughts.
Yeah, no, I love it. I mean, to me, before we got to this point, HBO was well known more, and this was really the year before Sopranos, I believe. Sex and the City came out, which was, you know, massive, massive female audience, right? Before that, we had Tales from the Crypt,
Larry Sanders Show.
You had Dream On,
Arliss,
yeah, the sports agent. Sports agent, you know, just kind of keeping it real before we got to some other shows that we can get to in a little bit that were canceled due to how realistic they were. So they've always been pushing the envelope a little bit. And I feel like with Sopranos, we got more of the all around family feel that we never really got from anything besides for The Godfather. in terms of the family dynamic. And then you throw in a psychiatrist and then everything else going on. So I think between Sex and the City and Sopranos leading that charge in the late 90s, whereas Friends is a little bit dying down, Seinfeld's dying down. Now you have these primetime networks, which they don't have to be PG-13. They can be rated R, and you still wait on a weekly basis. And then a couple years after that, like I mentioned, 2004, Entourage came out. 8 episodes the first season, you know, not exactly jaw-dropping by any means, but it was still entertaining. Originally, HBO came out with a concept to do a reality show based on Mark Wahlberg's life. And he was like, no, I'm not going to have you following me around with cameras all day, every day. But I'm more than happy to, you know, help execute a show that's loosely based on my life. And he's been an executive producer on that, him and Lev. And, you know, really since then, they've been marching forward. Of course, EP credits going towards Boardwalk Empire, Ballers, How to Make It in America, and so much and so forth. To me, this represents a great time in just my life, especially when we get to season 2 to 3 of Entourage, to where Sunday nights, this was it. This was Sunday fun day, like family dinners at, you know, my place or whoever's place. We would kind of pick and choose. Big shout out to my boy Dave Alter out there. You know, he would normally cook the Italian food. He's the chef of the group for sure. And then we would go right to watching Sopranos and then immediately after Entourage. So I will say, in terms of just Sunday night television, for as long as I can remember, that's not, you know, Fox or NBC or CBS or anything like that. For primetime television, this was it. I mean, before Game of Thrones, before everything else, you know, True Blood, all that.
Yeah. You would get Sopranos for an hour and then you would maybe get a Curb Your Enthusiasm for 30 minutes or you'd get an Entourage for 30 minutes. It just kind of depended on obviously when the seasons were coming out or whatever. But, you know, Sunday nights, HBO year round, back in the, you know, really just the aughts, right? The late 90s all the way through like the early teens, you know, really prior to the big revolution of streaming television, man, HBO Sunday nights was the place to be. And I think they dabbled. I'm trying to think what shows it was. I think they tried to start doing like a Tuesday night show or maybe like a Thursday night show. And it just didn't hit the way those Sunday night shows did. But, you know, look, HBO Sunday nights from, you know, 9 to 11 or whatever it was the place to be.
Bring home Bob Marley, One Love on digital now, celebrating the life and music of an icon who inspired generations through his message of love, peace, and unity. Buy Bob Marley, One Love on digital today and get over 50 minutes of behind-the-scenes footage and deleted scenes. Available at participating retailers, rated PG-13 from Paramount Pictures. Monumental television. I mean, plain and simple. I mean, there's Entertainment Weekly articles on how The Sopranos changed television with dynamic and everything else. So, you know, in terms of that, you know, we're going to get into some favorite episodes, characters, this, that, and the other. Entourage, Saba and I, before we even started this podcast, this is a show that we talk about on a regular basis. You know, just the entertainment factor. Then you start throwing in the cameos. I mean, who would have known season 2 we would have got James Cameron of all people, right? Then it just goes on and on and on to where people were like begging.
And Mandy Moore. I mean, don't forget.
Right. And of course, Mandy Moore. Now, you know, really season 2 is where the show found its legs, you know.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, even if you ask the cast, and I've seen a lot of interviews, you know, they really thought the pilot was going to be it. They thought maybe they make it past season 1. And then I think the big thing was James Cameron, not saying that he single-handedly saved the show, but you throw in a big gun like that to a show like this, and of course with the backing of Mark Wahlberg, it just goes on and on. So, you know, in terms of favorite episodes for me, just starting with Entourage, I will say the final episode of season 2, you know, and by the way, this is obviously announced before the episode started, but It's way too late for spoilers. We're talking 25th and 20th anniversary.
Yeah,
Jesus. So if you've not caught up,
Jesus, people,
shit, don't be mad. But you know, season two, final episode, where Vince is about to just drop off of Aquaman, blow up his career, and then he has to sit down with James Cameron. You know, then he comes out, and he's getting ready to go on his own path.
Yeah.
Nobody knows where they're going. You know, I just love that camaraderie to where. And I mean, you and I can testify to this. Like, true friends argue, plain and simple. True friendship is not rainbows and sunshine 24/7.
I don't argue with any of my friends. My friends argue with me. I just listen to them.
So that one for me, I was like, you know what? I'm really, really, really feeling this show. And then, of course, season three, following up episode one, Aquamom. Where you see mom come in. It was still great to see Ma come in for the premiere. And then, of course, the following episode, I think they're really back to back to back to me. You know, end of season two, season one, where Aquaman makes its splash. No pun intended.
No.
Really wasn't a pun intended in that. And then he does his almost famous in the high school party during Heat Stroke. So those are three of my favorite episodes. Honorable mention, love it in season two when they go to Comic-Con.
Yeah.
Johnny Drama is in his element.
Yeah. He's
known for Torval in Viking Quest. And I love the line where Vince is like, I don't know if he's my brother or if I'm his brother here at Comic-Con.
Yeah, for sure. I would say the beat Spidey, you know, when they beat Spidey that episode, I think everybody knows that one. It's like one day in the valley or whatever. There was rolling brownouts. They couldn't get anywhere. It was fucking hot. Drama was bitching as usual. And, you know, it was just a whole day. The Josh Weinstein episode where Ari goes to his boss's beach house and just fucking embarrasses him. And where's Josh Weinfuck? you'll be representing Toto the dog faced bitch boy when I get done with you. You know, that episode, obviously the Playboy Mansion with Ralph Macchio and Pauly Shore, where, you know, they banned Macchio and Drama from the Playboy Mansion from something that happened in the 80s.
Yeah.
And when Hugh Hefner confronts them, because they both sneak in, they figure out that it was Pauly Shore that let the monkeys out or whatever the fuck it was. And the famous line in that episode, Ari's trying to sneak out of his house and Mrs. Ari's like, are those pajamas under your suit? And he's like, look, baby, strip clubs, whorehouses, Playboy Mansion. I go where the talent goes.
Yeah.
And then the last one is the Bat Phone episode. The Bat Phone makes a lot of, this is Ari's Bat Phone that he had specifically for Vince. That phone makes a lot of appearances throughout the series, but there's one specifically when Ari and his wife, Mrs. Ari, are in therapy and she's like, Ari, don't answer the fucking phone. And he's like screaming at her about,
you know, in Agora Hills.
If you want to go to therapy in Agora Hills at 2 o'clock on a motherfucking Tuesday, I got to answer the phone. It's Vince, baby. You know, and it's like, I think that piece, and the reason why I bring that Bat Phone up and just sort of that exchange in therapy, that is a microcosm of the entire show of Vincent Chase and his friends sort of making Ari Gold, even though he's the most powerful agent in Hollywood, fucking jump through hoops. He has to get him the roles that they can't get. He has to find a way to go to studios for him to be able to direct a movie when he's never directed a movie before. Like, if you think about all the things that happened throughout that show, that's sort of a microcosm. Like when fucking Vince calls You have to answer it. It doesn't matter what time it is. It doesn't matter where you're at. Yes. It doesn't matter what status your relationship's in. You know, you could be on the verge of divorce. Like, if you want to go to France for 2 weeks or whatever, or if you want to go live in the fucking hills and I'll represent, you know, D-list movie stars, TV stars, I can do that. So those are probably my most memorable moments. Certainly, I guess lastly, the paintball scene when he goes back to get Lloyd and he shoots Adam Davies with the paintball gun. And, you know, he's like, Lloyd, I'm not when he goes back, when he buys the agency and fucking fires everybody. Yeah. So, I mean, look, obviously so many, we could go on forever.
We could. BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from Major League Baseball, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Bet online, where the game starts. Brother. So in that token, Sopranos episodes, here's a couple of my favorites. I got to say, first and foremost, in a lot of the mafia movies that we've seen and watched, and you and I have covered a lot, not covered so much on the podcast, but as friends talked about a ton, I got to say where Chris gets made, and I believe that's season 3.
Yeah,
is one.
Big, it was a big episodes. Deal.
Huge deal. And it's really, as far as I could tell, and I'm not saying any other movie has not done it, but this was the first time I'm actually seeing a making ceremony.
Yeah.
So gigantic deal. This is what Chris is, you know, leading up to really from episode 1 where he whacks the, you know, I'm not going to use a derogatory term. He whacks the guy. So, he should have been made from there. And then,
and then, well, that's what he keeps saying.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's a nice little subtle, very subtle tribute to Goodfellas in season 1, where he's in the bakery, he's waiting in line, guy cuts in front of him. And then he goes to the baker. He's like, what the hell's going on? Then he shoots him in the foot. He's like, oh, you shot me in the foot. And he goes, it happens. Nice little shout out to Spider.
Spider, you stuttering, muttering you prick.
Stuttering, buttering, mick pricky. So, love that shout out. But yeah, the making episode I thought was monumental because, like I said, to me, that's the first time I've witnessed this. And I feel like I've watched just about every mafia movie that there is. And Tony getting out of the hospital after he got shot and laying down the dominance for no reason at all whatsoever, but just to ensure to his people that he's still the boss.
Yeah.
I thought was just great. I mean, to me, James Gandolfini, even if he does get enough credit, I still feel like he does not get enough credit. I think this is one of the greatest actors that unfortunately we lost too soon. And his portrayal of Tony Soprano is top notch. I mean, I'll put it in their top 5.
It's up there with Bryan Cranston as Walter White. With
100%.
You know, just it's the top. It's at the top. He's in the GOAT conversation for GOAT television character of all time.
1,000%. So. Yeah.
Look, I thought that season 1 was actually. If you go back and rewatch it, I think season 1's. Probably the worst season. Huh? I would say, you talked about when he came out of the coma. I thought those first 2 or 3 episodes where he was in the coma in season 6 was just terrible. Like, I'm like, what the fuck are they doing with this terrible. Thing? But the moments or the episodes that I remember the most, look, when they killed Big Pussy, out in the boat.
Yeah.
It was leading up to that, like the whole season was leading up to it. And you were kind of like, I don't know, is Tony going to be up? Because that was his best friend growing up. You know what I mean? Is he going to be able to kill this guy? And they obviously killed him without thinking about it. And that sort of set, because that was season 1, right?
Yeah.
That kind of
when they killed him, it was actually season 2.
It was in season 2.
Yeah.
But you knew throughout season 1 that he was an informant for the FBI. Mm-hmm. So, leading up to that, it was obviously a will he or won't he situation. And they did it. when his sister Janice shot Richie Aprile. You know, that's the other thing. Jackie Aprile was Tony's other best friend who had died of cancer. Yeah. And his brother comes in and marries Tony's sister. And he's fucking smacking her around and trying to be a fucking gangster. And you're thinking the whole time that Tony's going to end up fucking whacking this dude out. But he fucking smacks her at the kitchen table and she just fucking shoots him over some fucking gravy and, you know, some noodles and gravy. So that was one. And then look. Probably the episode that this show is most known for is when Pauly Walnuts and Chrissy are chasing that fucking Russian in the woods. And they had, and we still don't know what happened. They shot him in the head, but we don't know what fucking happened. And they're trying to call Tony and there's no reception. And, you know, that whole thing was just, that is one of the most memorable, because they're just like fucking buffoons and they're freezing and it's cold and it's snowing. And this Russian was like, he was from like Siberia or whatever. And, you know, he was built for it. So Anyways, I would say probably moment wise, you know, look, there's obviously a lot of moments, a lot of characters get killed. There's a lot of, but the pussy, the big pussy murder. Whew. Yeah, don't clip that. The pussy murder.
No. Yeah.
When they killed Sal, yeah. You know, that kind of set the tone for the rest of the show. So yeah, I'll say those are my most memorable moments. I'm gonna say maybe this is a hot take.
Uh-huh.
I think one of the worst fucking characters, just like just bad people in that whole show is Jackie Aprile Jr. You know, when that show was on, I think that Jackie Jr. was like a beloved character. And when he ends up getting killed for robbing that card game or whatever, like they do the whole funeral and everybody's fucking crying. Like the acting in that episode is like next level. You're like, holy shit. This is a real funeral. These people are really in mourning for this character. However, that dude was a fucking scumbag piece of shit. He was cheating on Meadow and just a fucking
show. Tony, no respect,
no respect, bad friend. He's just a terrible fucking person. So my two least favorite characters in The Sopranos are Livia and Jackie Jr. Entourage. Andrew Klein, played by Gary Cole, who is Ari's old like partner or whatever, college roommate. I don't fully remember the whole backstory, but he gets all addicted to fucking drugs and is all caught up in the junior agent
with the great ass.
I can't remember her name.
This every single
but
day.
Like he just, you know, Ari kind of went to bat for him and he just kind of fucked him over. And look, is Ari Gold a great fucking person? No. But he is a family man and he was always good to his wife. And they kind of changed that because in the first season, he talked about kind of cheating on his wife.
First two seasons.
But then obviously, you know, he never did, you know, obviously all the stuff about Cancun with Dana Gordon and all that. Right. But he never did. Exactly. So I would say that Andrew Klein and then Adam Davies, you know, he... Josh Weinstein would be, but like he wasn't around long enough. Like Adam Davies kept coming back and like fucking meddling in Ari's shit and giving him a hard time. So, and that's just a character. Like the Andrew Klein, the Gary Cole played character is just, he's just a fucking loser, right? But the Adam Davies, he was just like a scumbag fucking snake that was always meddling and shit and trying to fuck shit up. So, those are probably the two characters that I like the least from Entourage.
Man, between that and your Sopranos picks, all the air horns. I'm glad I just went slightly different. I did the fist pump there because I definitely agree. I thought Jackie Jr. was just entitled just piece of shit. Besides that, in terms of Entourage, I'm going to go. I always loved Little Emily. Little Emily from season one, Ari's assistant.
Don't fuck my assistant, E.
Yeah. You know, Eve fucked that all up. I always thought she was a cutie pie. She made a nice little cameo. And
she was James Cameron's assistant.
James Cameron assistant. Exactly. And really, my unsung hero for since she left has been Lloyd. Lloyd Lee has been a constant, has been a consigliere to Ari of all people. And honestly, the voice of reason. So anyone, and here's why.
And he got drama fucking Johnny's Bananas.
Exactly. Anyone that can manage and be the agent for Johnny Drama, but also be the assistant to Ari Gold, they deserve
speaking all the of powers. That, Adam Davies was Johnny's first fucking agent. And he's right. Like, John, it's a dry out deal. There. John, yeah. It's dry out there.
Yeah. Do you think that... And I'm not saying it's going to be PG-13, but if you go back and watch it, there's obviously a lot of a dialogue that will not fly in this current day and age. If they do go back and revisit this, do you think it's A, for one, possible? Because to me, there is no show without Ari. I could watch The Four Friends all day long, don't get me wrong, but I think Ari makes the show. I was actually surprised that they didn't try to do a spinoff after the show was canceled to do one on Ari and just kind of like him running stuff in Hollywood. And then of course you get more cameo appearances and things like that. But I would just love to kind of hear your thoughts in now a 2024 world, the world we're living in right now, people getting canceled left and right. You know, how would this go down if we were to bring back an Entourage?
Look, Kevin Conley and Kevin Dillon and Doug Allen they've got a podcast. Now, I don't know if they're still doing it, but they did it for quite a long time and they kind of always talk about it.
Yeah.
Look, Piven was always the reason why that show almost fell off the rails. Every time they had to renegotiate contracts, Jeremy Piven was always the fucking problem. Now, he was the biggest star on the show, so he deserved to make the most money. And I think the other four guys were just like, look, we're content with all of us making the same amount of money, and Piven wanted more money. I think what holds that back from either doing a reboot, you know, an extra season or a couple extra seasons or even a sequel to the movie isn't the state of, you know, cancellations and what you can say and what you can't, because look, you can still be edgy. I mean,
sure,
just the goalposts have moved a little bit, right? So, you know, I think you can still be edgy. I think what holds it back is the fucking show started 20 years ago. You know, it's been off. That movie came out like 10 years ago. Is there an audience for it anymore?
Right.
You know, I mean, and there is so much reality TV and trash bullshit that's out there now that all that fucking shit that I don't watch. But dude, if they did another movie, I'd watch it. If they did another show, I'd watch it. I'd love for them to do it. If I had to choose whether we see more or we never see it again, my guess is they're probably going to go back to the well. Because it, first of all, Adrian Grenier doesn't fucking age. I just saw him not too long ago on something and he looks younger than he did during episode one Entourage. So he doesn't age. Piven's got some of the best fucking, plastic surgeons in Hollywood going. I mean, his fucking hairline, his cheekbones. Piven looks fucking great. Yeah. Kevin Conley always looked like a little boy. Like always. He doesn't age. The one that and Jerry Ferrara looks fucking
just the same.
Fantastic. The only one that is fucking drama. Kevin Dillon. I saw him, and so look. My guess is we're probably going to see it at some point. Look, they move the goalpost. You can still be edgy. You don't have to be, overtly sexist or anything like that. I think it makes sense. And I think we'll probably see it. I mean, at some point, and look, maybe they just do, they try it with a whole different crew. You know what I mean? I mean, you could easily reboot that thing. They could do it with a female cast, you know what I mean? Like there's a number of different ways that they could go with that. And I think you'll see it on Entourage. I mean, dude, Johnny Drama's just You say his name and people fucking laugh. Drama is by far the best fucking character on that show. I'm going to tell you what, my unsung guy that maybe a lot of people don't like and they think that he's kind of a scumbag is fucking Billy Walsh. Like, I love Billy Walsh when he gets the fucking tattoo of Escobar, the Medellin tattoo on his back. Like, when they first meet him to do
Queens Boulevard,
they go to this fucking
they go to Chateau.
the hotel room, yeah. And like, it's the middle of the day. Everybody's all fucking strung out. Like, he's laying over in the corner in his fucking underwear. And like, the scene where he's like, all right, Vince, I did a little rewrite. I'm going to play the guy and you're going to have to blow me. And Vince is like, what the fuck is going on? But like, dude, just the Billy Walsh character, just the eccentric.
Yeah.
Hollywood guy, super passionate about his work, did all the cuts of Medellin and wouldn't let anybody fucking seen it because it, you know, it was his, it's going to be my mean streets. You know what I mean? Like, just super well-versed and educated in the different directing styles and the directors. Like, the Billy Walsh character was super complex. The guy that plays him is an awesome actor, and he's been in other things, but, yeah, those are my two favorite characters. Drama by far, and the Billy Walsh character is just, I thought he was phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah. Excellent, excellent choices there. As always, I mean, drama keeps the show going. You just never know what drama is going to drama. And in the immortal words of Ari Gold, drama, what is your drama this time? And then with Billy Walsh, I mean, when he loses his shit to where he's even somewhat composed towards the end. And that's the one thing I really like about the final season, as much as a shit show that it is Billy Walsh kind of coming back around.
Yeah, he was like the leveling factor. Yeah. Right.
And he needed E for help, not Vince so much. So that was really my saving grace for the final season. Of course, you got great cameos. You got Eminem in there and everything else. But yeah,
Punch.
They definitely jumped a shark. And you felt like,
oh my God.
Well, here we go.
I forgot about maybe the best fucking episode ever. The one where they fucking get in a fight with Seth Green. But hold on. When they get in a fight with Seth Green in Las Vegas,
baby.
But what caused the fight is Johnny with the masseuse. Johnny Drama with the masseuse, where he's like, Kent, I got you locked up for the whole weekend. And he's like bringing him the fucking, the candies and all this. And this dude's like, wait a minute, am I supposed to fuck this guy?
Yeah.
And Johnny takes him to his hotel room and like goes to get ready for his massage. And the dude gets fucking naked and lays in bed. And Johnny comes out of the bathroom and he's like, Kent, the fuck are you doing? And then they go and they get in a fucking fight with Seth Green. Dude, that Vegas episode is one of the best.
I can't believe I forgot
that. I don't know what just spurned that in my brain.
The Vegas episode is so good because you got Seth Green messing with E the entire episode.
Hey, tell Sloan I said what's up.
Yep. And then you have his like douchebag
between. Hey, it's Vinny right Chase and the him. Chasers.
It's the We Don't Do Jaeger crew.
Yeah.
Like the whole.
And then Ari goes, hi, Seth. He goes, yeah, you'd be surprised.
Malibu.
yes, sir. Love it.
So good. So good.
All right, party goers, thank you so much for listening. Be sure to like, subscribe, follow Zero Dark Nerdy across all your favorite social media platforms, and most importantly, your podcast platforms. Give us a like, give us a comment, follow the whole entire nine yards. Give us a rating. We will love you so much more for doing that. But most importantly, big shout outs to our incredible sponsors out there. BetOnline.ag, the Believe Podcast Network, Zipster with our incredibly amazing website. If you're looking for a website that's easy to navigate and easy to update, be sure to reach out to Jeremy and his team over at Zipster. And most importantly, our main sponsor, that is, of course, Sailfish Comics, with three locations in North Carolina, one in Winston-Salem, one in Greensboro, and of course, one in Concord. As always, thank you so much for listening. We truly, truly, truly appreciate the support, and we cannot wait to see you next time. Peace.
And anger management?
Fuck anger management.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.